that was good. That was Johnny Hodges doing Daydream. And before that, Mozart doing Symphony No. 25 in G minor. Tracy says that she likes the classical music. Well, that was a pretty good dose. Now, Johnny Hodges, he's worth talking about for a second. Born in 1906, a year older than Garrett Dean, and he died in 1970. But Garrett lived another 23 years. So he lived 64 years about. He was American alto saxophonist, best known for his solo work with Duke Ellington's Big Band. He played lead alto in the saxophone section for many years, except the period between 1932 to 1946 when Otto Hardwick generally played first chair. Hodges was also featured on soprano saxophone, but refused to play soprano after 1946 when he was given the lead chair. He's considered one of the definitive alto saxophone players of the big band era, alongside Benny Carter. He started playing out with Lloyd Scott, Sidney Bechet, Lucky Roberts, and Chick Webb. When Ellington wanted to expand his band in 1928, Ellington's clarinet player Barney Biggard recommended Hodges, who was featured on both alto and soprano sax. His playing became one of the identifying voices of the Ellington Orchestra. Hodges left the Duke to lead his own band from 51 to 55, but returned to the large ensemble shortly before Ellington's triumphant return to prominence. The orchestra's performance at the 1956 Newport Jazz Festival. Even a huge legend like Duke Ellington goes through periods when they're not known in their career. So remember that, Tracy, when you go back in the news business, that could happen to you. You'll be remembered and then not remembered, so either way, it's perfect. So we have an interesting point happening here. Crazy Ron is... he told me it was Alan Arkin who was trying to think of, and he's right. Then I said, there's a movie I liked 40 years ago. And he says, Catch-22. And I said, no, that's not the movie. So I checked it out. It's called Little Murders. But Ron goes on about Catch-22, which happened in 1970. Little Murders, like about a year later. He says, wow, Catch-22, very cool movie. That's some catch, that Catch-22. It's the best there is. And he's quoting something. Maybe he's quoting Alan Arkin in the movie. Then he remembers, oh, Little Murders. He suggests Little Murders, but by that time I figured out. Then he goes, this is another post. Is that the movie, Little Murders? Then he says, I need to get some more. Now, Ron, you know, he just keeps posting endlessly. And when he got the RNA drops a year or more ago, he stopped doing this. He got sane. He celebrated the RNA drops. So now he's posting a lot. So I started to wonder what's happened with the RNA drops. He says, I need to get some more RNA drops, man. I'm feeling too hyperactive lately. Shit, I hate being out of my mind, but I don't want to get that. I don't want to get like that movie inspired by William Burroughs called Make Lunch, where I need the bug powder to stay normal, for God's sake. Love bug powder. That shit's a trip. Then he says, it's a Kafka high, because you feel like a bug. You know, Franz Kafka, his book Metamorphosis, the guy turns into a bug. Damn, I wish that I could take LSD, but it's too hard in my system, so I think I need to do like Terrence McKenna said and take the heroic doses of psilocybin and then read James Joyce's Finding Its Wake. I've been wanting to read the book for years, but never got around to reading it. And he says, another post, I will probably be able to get the RNA drops in a month or two when I finally get some money coming to me. I've already taken the drops before, only one bottle. But I need more. I need to slow my hyperactive system down with the drops because I refuse to take Ritalin to slow my system down so that I stop relating to others from my hyperactive condition, like now. Capital N-O-W. So that's enough from him. Hopefully get the drops. And the drops are not just for your craziness. It's for other neat nutrition. Other stomachs will be satisfied. So did I say enough on Johnny Hodges and Mozart? We all know Mozart. Okay, so we got Madeline, Richard, and Shane here. Who would like to speak?
I'd like to tell a little RNA story.
Okay.
My mum started on RNA drops and Remag last Monday, so that's, 10 days approximately. And she's had a niggling cough, a dry throat-scented cough for about 5 years. And she's tried numerous things, Western medicine techniques, and then eventually about a year ago she tried a naturopath, and none of it has worked. And the main reason I've been keen to get her on the RNA drops is because of that cough. And she sent me an email yesterday saying, no, I can't really notice any changes, but I'm feeling good. So I rang her today and said, "So, you know, what's happening? Hey, you're feeling good. That's great." She said, "Yes, yes." But I can't really notice any other changes. And I said, "Well, have you been coughing?" And she said, "Actually, no, I don't think I've coughed for 2 or 3 days." So she appears to have developed some, had some effects, and they're positive. And then she also went on to tell me a story about the antenna plug fell out of her TV, and she couldn't get reception on the main TV. She didn't know why at this point, so she went to her second TV, and she couldn't get reception there. And then she started poking around at the main TV and found out that there's a plug had disconnected, and she connected that one up, and she was very happy. And then she went back to the other TV, which was absolutely not connected to the main TV, and suddenly that one worked as well.
Well, not being connected. It yes. works without being connected.
Oh, well, I didn't tell that very well. When she went to the second TV to see if it was an aerial issue or some, you know, she just wasn't sure what was causing it. The second TV wasn't working also. However, the first and the second TV have no connection whatsoever. They're not using the same aerial or the PowerPoint. It's the other end of the house. And then she found the source of the issue for the main TV, which was a plug had fallen out, put it back in, and then went to the second TV, and that also was working. So it's actually a little anomaly. I tried to say, "Well, Mum, Ion might say that, you know, you know, this explanation." And she says, "Yes, well, or it could have, you know," she couldn't accept it. And I said, "That's fine, it doesn't matter." But the main thing is that she really does seem to have noticed some changes already, and she's not really aware of them at the time. So she said, "I better keep trying to notice any other, you know, to notice when I'm not coughing."
Yeah.
So anyway, it's quite positive. And she started the REMAG and the RNA drops at once. So, you know, we might not know what's directly causing the benefit. But
okay, here's a response. That we don't have many variety of callers. We have you call in pretty regularly. We have one or two other people call in regularly. Tracy called in, but she's not here tonight. But now we've got Madeline, or we had Madeline. And we don't have many people calling in, all right, over the last 2 months. But we get all these stories of anomalies and RNA drop stories coming from you people.
Yeah.
We're talking about, you know, 5 people, and it fills up each show with interesting anomalies.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting. The next point is that that we were explaining to Sarah that, who was it who stepped? You stepped into another part of the room or to another room.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I've said that you have a private session with Ion, you're not the same person at the end of the session. You actually have a parallel world experience when you interact with Ion. It's like, how can you hear non-physical? Well, you got to get out of this physical and go to another weird physical to hear them. So your mother became a different person, like many people do after a private session, and they don't have the concerns they had before the session. She does not think about her cough because she doesn't have it anymore because she's a different person, having been affected by the RNA drops.
Yeah. And that was particularly obvious to me when she described what it was like to not be so worried when she realized the TV wasn't working. Because at the moment, because, you know, Dad died about 12 months ago, and so Mum's kind of, you know, she's on her own a lot, and the TV is quite significant for her in terms of entertainment, and she's only just starting to explore the internet and that sort of connecting with people, which she's really embracing. But I knew that that would be really scary for her, and she also, you know, can't really afford the repairman, so she would have been typically worried about all that. But she wasn't. She told me today she was surprised by how little it concerned her. And then it was reconnected. So it's just great. It's classic Ion kind of effect after RNA, and I'm really, really pleased for her. So,
Did you tell her that her indifference is an effect of RNA drops?
I tried to suggest that, and she said it's a little bit woo-woo, you know, for her.
See, their minds, they can't take this reason, but it doesn't matter. She got slack by default. It's a metaphor. What's that? People, when they come back from the gop, they're going to be eternal, but by default. And that gives you more slack. You don't have to worry about her. You don't have to have son, mother worries, because she's all stoned out on the new soma called RNA drops, and then you can forget about her. You know, she's okay.
Yeah. So it's good. She's just gotten and ordered another proper bottle today, and you know, so, and she's, you know, and that was the first internet purchase she's ever made, and
and look at this. Like, her mind is living in the 19th century. She won't have these things, but she'll take the bottle. People believe in physical substance. They believe in the physical. They don't care what you say about it. Give me that stuff. It works, is what her behavior is based on.
That's right.
So that's pretty good. That's good story there.
So thank you, Bob, and just, you know, publicly thank you, because that's, you know, I've been having a great time on the drops, but I was a little bit surprised that Mum even was open to the idea of taking them. So she's getting into it.
Yeah, and she gets good benefits. We get such good results from this product. This is what's fun about it, you know. Okay, so Tracy had said, just to complete her message a while ago, I hear something, now this is important what she says, I hear something different each time you play the ion clip. That's true. I was listening to the third time, I said, this could be different, you know? Almost like it's an entirely different message. Ion sounds the way they did on the very first radio show that you did with Evan Ray. I enjoy the classical music, but that's a good point. It is good that we're replaying it. Because now we'll get people to notice that it's not always the same every time.
Yep.
That's the power of ion. It's the power of the inaudible, the non-physical that's affecting your brain through the hearing. It's more than what you're hearing. And the hearing is subject to change because there's more going on. So that's pretty neat. Now, Ron, Crazy Ron is carrying on. He said, like now, hyperactive. And then he posted a short message, end of line. So he's got a hold of himself. He's not going to post anymore, we hope. Then Mike in Utah says, when Ion said tonight, we need to adjust the shift here and there regarding the poles, referencing an upcoming pole shift, or what's that about, ? How's that supposed to be done? Nothing. Nothing to be done. You let Ion speak, he infects you, and it's a test to see if you ignore what he says. Because he already told you, he's told you everything. So then he keeps talking to see if you fall for the new rhythm, the new concern. Don't worry about it. No polls are going to affect us. It's a kind of a game. I don't want to say it's a stupid game or just mainly game, because there's some other frequency going on. Ion's communicating through frequencies, and the words are just the piece, a juicy piece of meat to distract the watchdog of your mind, while Ion the burglar gets other effects happening. So that's the good news. So maybe we'll play it one more time later. This is the fourth hour. We're going to go another hour after this. I haven't gotten any of my stuff done, but I don't mind. I get nothing to get done unless there has to be something done. Now, we've had Richard or Madeline. You want to say anything, or are you just absorbing?
You know what? I do want to make a comment. You just on the I think it was last week or maybe Tuesday. You played Four Non Blondes. That was
yes.
A parody.
Yeah, the Non Blondes.
That was. That whole album was pretty good. I mean that was their hit song, but you know, they played Morphine and Chocolate, and Spaceman was a great song. It really shows the range of her voice, but I just thought I would mention that out there. That was a wonderful choice. So
yeah, so this is what I'm very proud of this variety I'm offering, because it'll surprise people. You never would have thought you'd hear that. I don't even know who they are, but I found them. I said, they're good. Let's play that. Are they from San Francisco, from where you are?
They originated here. She has a great voice.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's so much good music that's been made over the last 20 years. I never heard of it. I love YouTube. What a great medium to find all this stuff. And then you find out this stuff is done, it's great, and then it's gone. It's see, this is the amazing thing, is that the goneness of everything. And everything goes away so quickly. And it's a great effort. Good for a moment, and they got some attention. Maybe they made some recognition. But where are they now? Who knows? But so we don't need another musical creation. We got so much to listen to now. It's not going to stop, but just on principle, we don't need it anymore. We got so much. It's no longer we got more non-physical than we're ever going to use. We got more physical now than we can use in terms of information.
There's another lady. You know, encomium means. It's like encomium is tribute.
Yes, you're right. Encomium means tribute.
And there was a Led Zeppelin. It's called encomium. That was the name of the. It was a tribute to Led Zeppelin, and there was a young lady who sang "Going to California," and she actually that song on that album, on that tribute album, was phenomenal. She even did it better than Led Zeppelin, you can find that hard to believe. The range of that they gave for that, but I'm trying to think of her name right now. But an obscure person, I don't, you know, not in the limelight. But if you listen, if I can find it, maybe I can email it to you or something.
But yeah, you can do that.
Range. Yeah, I mean, you play them back to back, you can see the difference, and it's. I mean, she almost does it exactly like them, but she has a better voice or something. I don't know. There's something more about it. But,
and remember, that's your view. Others may not like it. See, that's the other point.
Yeah.
What you like, nobody else may like.
Right.
So
right.
It doesn't matter.
If you don't like the song, you won't like it.
Yeah, I won't play if I don't like it. But I never know what I'm going to like. I have no rules about it. Just look around. That's why, you know, Mike could write back. He says, what are we supposed to do with the polls? Well, Ion mentioned the polls. He could say, well, you're saying nothing's being done. Ignore it. Well, why are we listening to Ion? Well, why are you breathing, Mike? It doesn't matter. You keep living. You keep doing the same thing, and new stuff comes out of it. So Ion will keep reporting what doesn't have to be reported and doing new ways of making it better. And then we have the RNA drops, okay? You can't out argue the RNA drops. How can you? I feel like Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now. Remember, he's talking to Martin Sheen outside Colonel Kurtz, played by Marlon Brando, and he's saying stuff like, "I mean, you can't analyze that guy. You can't analyze Kurtz. I mean, how are you going to get from here to there? How are you going to get to the moon?" And this was being recorded, filmed, you know, very close to when the moon shots were happening. Actually, no, that's not right. The movie was made in 76, but I don't know what I was thinking. I'm sorry for that, Patter. That didn't work. Anyways, nobody held responsible for it.
That's a first. I've never heard you stop mid-pattern, Bob.
That's right. Well, that's right. See, always something new is going to happen. Yeah, mid-pattern. Pattern interrupt. I never heard Bob do one on himself.
Yeah, you did.
But it's great. It's a great rap. Matter of fact, let's see. I could quickly go to YouTube. I know it's on YouTube. You go like this. You go to YouTube. Where's YouTube, Carol? Where's YouTube, Carol? Help me find YouTube. Okay, there it is. You just type it in. It comes up. You say, what would you say? Apocalypse Now, Dennis Hopper. Apocalypse Now. Now, Dennis Hopper, who's passed on. Dave Worcester met him once in a bar in Venice. There he is. Okay, there he is. He's talking to the Apocalypse Now. So, is it this? I remember he's talking real close. So, we'll try this one. So, now I got to get the sound system up. Sound is up. Over to here. That's there. Then you go like this. If it's not it, I will stop it and do it again. Do another one. Yeah, here it is. It says Dennis Hopper's iconic rant. It's only 27 seconds, though, but let's see.
I mean, what are they going to say?
That was good. Now, there's another one here. Did you guys get that?
Yep, I got it.
I'd like that to ever interrupt.
Yeah, here it is. You can't go out into space. Now, this movie, now here's what's interesting. The movie's made in 76 or 77, but it's about 1969. That's where I made the connection. He's saying this at the time the moon landing is happening, you know, in the linear timing, in the content of the movie. So he doesn't believe they're going to land on the moon if you time it that way. So listen to this. I'm just stopping that. This is a famous favorite line of JW, and Ion says it. It's Kurtz is reading from Holloman by T.S. Eliot, which is and which Ion, the JW always, it's the only English stuff he ever talked to me about. I talk about Joyce and Finnis Wake. He only knew Holloman, and he had a great memory, so he could say it. So either he or Ion has said these words we're hearing right now. He's using the end of the Holloman, and the world ends in a whimper, not a bang. He used that to run away from Brando, which is the rock. So that was good. You heard him rant there, right? You can't get to the moon. How are you going to land on a fraction? And then that just inspires me.
I heard that, not that, but I heard Ion quote T.S. Eliot in the last 24 hours on one of the, I don't know what it was, probably Radio Free Ion.
Well, again, you're running this show. You seem to be sculpting chunks of it. That's very good. If you listen to Ion during the day before the show, you'll be empowered and you'll influence my show. You know, that's what seems to be happening. But we got to play this just in response to that. This singer knew Dennis Hopper back in the 60s when they were friends of Lenny Bruce and all that. But this is a very good description of what was going on in the early 80s. A certain kind of decision-making. Let's see how clear this is. Is that pretty clear? Is that clear?
Yep. Yes.
So look what he's saying. He's saying he's looking at the effects. People are lawyers, doctors, and that, and they're doing stuff, and they're hopped up on cocaine. And the effects of what they do in their decisions under coke stone effect will show up years later in another way, and the doctor will have long forgotten what he'd done and not make the connection. It's a clever way to satirize, you know, to be moralistic. Cocaine decisions, that's where you're witnessing all over the place. People on cocaine making decisions that others get affected by, but they have no idea it's coming from someone who was on cocaine. And then you go like this, if you look down, it has a big documentary on the House of Rothschild. Now, they went public in 1981, right when Zappa was singing his song on the first MTV high-definition broadcast, stereo and TV combination. And Rothschild, that means they were going down when they went public in 1981, so maybe the Rothschilds were on a cocaine decision when they went public. Okay, so anybody got anything else to say?
I've got more.
Play some Ion. I think we should
play some Ion. Definitely.
Okay, so this is now we're on McLuhan and Maui, session 13. Ion came back for session 13. He was on session 3, session 11, and now seminar 13. This is May 23rd. And he comes in commenting on LaRouche. We're talking about LaRouche. Someone want to talk about LaRouche. Maybe this will lead to us talking about LaRouche. We're talking about LaRouche, and then McLuhan says, Ion mentions what LaRouche didn't know about. Here we go. Fool them. So you let them have a carnival, they let off steam, and then you put the prison locks of dogma, religious dogma, back on them the next day. That is a global form of, a cultural form of tetrad management or hypnosis. Crude version back in the, whenever it was, the medieval period into the printing press era. So that kind of brings us back. LaRouche shows you the managerial problems for tetrad management when the whole world in the global theater becomes a global carnival. You can't use the carnival for a particular purpose in programming the environment or the population that you did 100 years before.
Right. So the thing becomes like a medieval festival that the king can't control anymore.
Right, and that's why McLuhan had himself photographed by a merry-go-round or a Ferris wheel.
But in the quarter, you're dealing with the French influence, and within, if you're going to do the Lindy, you've got to go back to King George's influence, and there's where you sort of run into trouble.
So okay, now King George, which era is King George? You mean George I?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's before, that's the 1600s.
Well, that's when the French Quarter was.
Okay, right, New Orleans, right. So King George was up against Louis the 14th. Louis the 14th.
That's exactly correct. That's very good. So when you start applying from that level or tier, you're gonna sling, pardon the pun, you're gonna sling LaRouche off the Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
He was always trying to apply the Queen's aberrant subjugation to the portion of the country which had no effect from the Queen, which would be the French Quarter.
Right, but he would point out that the Queen would be related to the oligarchy around the Fondi, which would go beyond national boundaries.
No,
that's not an argument. You can't use blah, blah, blah here. We're intellectuals here. You've got to state some facts.
Well, we'll just tweet till our twat gets sore. That's what we'll do. So the point is, but see, the reality is the Cajuns, the Coonasses, they aren't having that. They aren't having it. They don't give a crap what the Queen or the Queen Mother thought about anything. They were almost done to themselves. And that's the whole point of strife that Lindy did not apply to Nolens or into those Biloxi arenas of that class and sect of what you call early America.
Right, and McLuhan didn't get into that Lindy trap. He was looking at other dynamics.
It's only Lindy that does the Lindy regarding that particular potential trap. Well, we'd say trap or pitfall.
Yeah.
Because they weren't listening. They didn't know. We don't know if their trouble was ignorance or apathy, but they didn't know and they didn't care.
They were oral culture. They were not propagandized by pamphlets or written orders.
Precisely.
Okay, Andrew.
While you were talking, I was reading through the rest of that letter from McLuhan to Don Thiel, and it's got some information that relates to the discussion of media environments as angels. Here's his... McLuhan says to Thiel, I've done a great deal, since you've been in Montreal, I've done a great deal of work on sensory study. Notice page 34 of Lucerne, where he mentions blindness as dope and inner tripping. TV is like that. It's a blind medium, fostering inner trips and hallucination. And he says, the eye of Shiva. So he's actually equating television with the eye of Shiva.
Pretty neat.
I don't think that's been talked about before.
No, never been said before. What is the eye of Shiva? He would always talk about the Cyclopean eye. Television was a one-eyed reality, right? Cyclopean. But
yeah,
the eye
is a major big Hindu deity, essentially a destroyer.
Right. The eye of Shiva. So the eye, of course, Shiva, if tactility, TV is not a visual medium, then the eye is the watchdog, the meat that distracts the watchdog of the mind, and Shiva is the other senses destroying what the eye is resting on.
Well, the point comes back to Shiva's watching you, just like the TV's watching you.
Yeah.
You are not watching Shiva, as you're pronouncing it, just like you are not watching the TV bodies. Experience that it's presenting to you. Otherwise, commercials wouldn't have any effect on you if you were watching TV.
Right. So the Orwell presents TV watching people in 1984. What is about what aspect of the watching you that Orwell didn't get that McLuhan got?
The application of the meme that was being pixelated. See, what Orwell missed was pixelation. It was all about the content, and McLuhan went way past the content and knew that it was the visual bias that set pixelation is to where you have to have a 200-inch 1080p with a Blu-ray can door and little glasses and a Samsung 3D visual bias that by the time you own it, it's obsolete. So even in once you went from analog to digital, or to digitize a pixelated view, is the difference between McLuhan and the Orwellian view.
Okay. Situate it more in terms of appetites. Orwell, this the human appetite for wanting to be surveilled and surveilling themselves and actually paying, desiring it.
Well, that's right, but people rarely miss foie gras if they've never engaged it.
So they have to engage, that's the medium of the message. They don't miss TV until they have it.
That's correct. You don't pine for good beluga caviar if you've never experienced it.
So once you have it, then you've been changed and it's part of your appetite.
Then you may decide in your, quote, future desire to experience it yet again.
Right, so, but you were emphasizing the pixelated as visual, whereas McLuhan said TV was not a visual medium. It was tactile.
No, we did not. Pixelation is the epitome of tactility.
Oh, okay.
Because pixelation says that with a 1080i, that you have stacks of the equivalent of 27-inch colored television cathode ray tubed.
Yeah.
Projections presented in a plasma or another medium of a, what you call the digitized pixels.
Yeah. Okay, good.
So it's the same song, just a different verse.
Okay, so we might not. Well, what's changed then? If you say the same
Orwell's
song.
Orwell's view, you are asking the differential between Orwellian view and Marshall's view. Marshall got the big picture. Didn't matter how digitized it became, it still became one of your bodies at the end of the day. Orwell had it limited to the subjugation with what the best that the cathode ray tube could present.
Right. So, okay, so that was great, Ion. We want to encourage dialogue on other issues, hold back, and let's see what other people want to go to, and then if you want to contribute, you can, but we don't want to make it a monologue. So Sue, are you still here? Maybe Sue Bogan say something. No? Who is here? Nobody wants
the question, Bob.
Barbara,
that's the big question.
Still here.
Okay, Barbara, do not address Ion. Talk about what you want to know or think about without, you know, making this an Ion session.
You must dial the area code and the telephone.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Regarding McLuhan, because I'm still kind of new to the whole McLuhan thing, even though I've heard you talk about him so many times. I've been on some of these calls, part of some of the calls. He seems so very different thinking than anybody on the planet.
Right.
Except for maybe you and maybe a couple other people I don't know of. But where did he come from the same source that we all came from? Or is he from, it's because the way he thinks is so different than everyone else I've ever heard before.
Right. Well, I found out from Ion that McLuhan was a parallel worlder, and I think it started in the 1930s, and by traveling to other worlds, he saw that the printing press was the common thing in all the worlds, even though the worlds were different. So Ion has a totally bizarre, you know, we can't prove it, but Ion explains that Marshall was the parallel worlder, and that might, to me, explain his detachment. He did not interact with people like a normal citizen. It was great detachment. That would be what a guy who's doing parallel worlding. Is there
like
something
an observer.
Even like a watcher.
Watcher.
So Ion, is there something about the parallel worlding you feel open, free enough to talk about that Marshall did?
Well, certainly. It was the empirical reference to the Joyce and the Wyndham Lewis apertures that he could apply that no one else seemed to be able to.
Right, right.
Everyone had an opinion regarding it, but he's the only one that would come to a logical, laudable conclusion that would stand.
Yeah.
Here it is 100 damn years later, and you're still talking about this shit. So if you come to that place, then it becomes very clear, and similarly, we can't even say it. We don't know why you'd want to do it. Similarly attractive from a protagonist's view regarding of what Marshall said about Marshall. You get right down to the grits and the gravy, or the soup to the nuts of the conversation. Describe exactly how Marshall described Marshall, and that'd be your tale.
Well, he began with the book From Cliché to Archetype. That's about himself. As a matter of fact, some people think after Understanding Media, he put out a classroom book, and then he becomes famous, and those books are him about himself. You got The Medium is the Massage, War and Peace in the Global Village, Through the Vanishing Point, Cultures of Business, From Cliché to Archetype, The Interior Landscape, Collection of His Criticism, and then Take Today. There is autobiographical aspects. It's McLuhan on McLuhan. Now, is that what you're getting at?
Yes, because if you get that, then many of these other queries become absolutely solvable and validatable from the position that you're trying to subjugate, which says, how did Marshall know how so much about what Marshall knew about? Well, when you apply it this way, all of a sudden it becomes very, very logical, and you don't have to wonder if the Queen's going to come have relations with you as Cindy would prescribe.
Right. So you're saying because he paralleled the world and saw his other selves, or was in touch with those selves, he was quite detached about the one self we saw.
And that's how he always came back. And regardless of the medium that he was engaged with, I mean, it made no difference if it was an MIT magna cum laude graduate or the most recent lady of ill repute from the Titty Club. Made no difference to him. He had great fun with it.
Yeah.
Because he knew it obsolesced immediately and could have just as interesting, intriguing conversation regarding application of media and its exchange. See, there's the thing you miss. Marshall spoke about the intrinsicity or intrinsic elasticity, so that'd be intrinsicity as a
yeah.
new word for you, Andrew. You can tweet that. To get you to a position to shift, to merge. Marshall was all about the merging. So then when you had the obsolescence or the division, then it would be a logical progression. And anything outside of that became a dogma.
Right, so his tactility was his word for merging, or the merging orchestrator.
Merging and noticing the variation, or some
yeah.
might say variegation of
yeah.
where it mixes and mingles and intertwines. And then, then the conversation goes, well, that makes no, never mind. It's where the rubber meets the road. And Marshall would say, no, it's where the road meets the rubber.
Yeah. No, that's
because
right.
Without a road, you're not going to have that conversation long.
That's right. That's right. And I think the word variegations is used like once by him. I seem to recall that word
right.
used once. It's an odd word.
And yet, it becomes an existential view
yeah.
of what he was trying to portray. All Marshall was trying to do was to bring you into a position where you had a plethora of choices. If you could get the big picture, then everything else, the cares of life, would grow strangely dim. And if you could embrace something as maniacal as the wake, well, you know, if you ain't figured out Issy, the wake ain't going to help you.
Right. Oh,
and
okay.
He's one of the few that would even embrace it from that position. So that's the end of the monologue, okay.
Yeah, no, what's interesting, Barbara, is that you have McLuhan, this respectable, so-called respectable professor, commenting and hanging out, like Ion said, with the topless dancers, or going to the dirty stuff that happened on the edges of society and making patterns out of them. He was like, in a sense, Jesus hanging out with the pub, the lowlife. I mean, that intellectually is what he was commenting on. You have to know that what he wrote about, people hated the stuff that he wrote about. They weren't interested, or they thought it was not worthy
it's
of anybody.
Why Mike Douglas avoided him like the plague.
Right. Yeah, I think he eventually got on there.
It also adds a new twist to that McLuhan's comments about my fallacy is all wrong that has come up again and again in our mom talks. Like in literature, like a mimetic, what they call a mimetic fallacy is, you know, attempting to convey an emotional state or idea by writing in a manner that corresponds to that state. Study himself as Lab and writing in such a way that mines the media environments and the transforming effect that they're having on older media and particularly the book, there's a nice angle on it.
Yeah,
My mimetic fallacy is all wrong?
Right. And remember, wasn't it Ivor Winters in the early 50s wrote about the mimetic fallacy? He talks about Ivor Winters criticizing the arts going into the mimetic fallacy. Does that sound familiar to you, Andrew?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's where he quotes.
That's Rhymer Revis, and it's a hard-to-pronounce title.
Yeah, but it's Ivor Winters does this, and, you know, he's obviously a rearview mirror guy, and he doesn't get what McLuhan's doing. McLuhan knew to put on the mimetic zone because that was appropriate in an electronic age. Just like, I don't know if Eric says this, but he should, Marshall's only interested in formal cause in the 20th century because it's applicable to the 20th century. Doesn't mean he's all for the... he's not for what he writes about. He says, if I write about something, you can be damn sure I'm not for it. I'm against it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Heidegger's talking about formal causes around the same time, and Heidegger makes a real point to try and push and go over the edge of those four causes. And we know from McLuhan that McLuhan only used obsolete dichotomies, you know, obsolete ways of talking about it. So, I mean, nobody's actually looked at his concern with formal causality as a thing that is obsolete.
That's right. It works in the 20th century because it's obsolescent. Advertising does it, uses it, and he's saying, look at the reasons why informal causality comes back.
Yeah,
were
now
it not
it's
for McLuhan, were it not for McLuhan, William Irwin Thompson wouldn't have had a prayer.
That's right. That's right. None of them would. Croker, Baudrillard, none of them would have had a prayer without McLuhan.
They'd stand on their own little island of their subjugation. But when you start up embracing it, you see, then it starts taking the Joycean, Peruvian view of application. It doesn't work without a
HMM.
Of the Senate structure.
That's Herbert Marshall McLuhan, Barbara. When you go, HMM. Now, you just said Peruvian. Last time Ian was here, Andrew, did you notice how he used the word Archimedean for Archimedes? Very well placed. Now, what is Peruvian here? What are you referring to? Peru?
Doing the Lindy.
No, but are you saying Peru the country or some other meaning?
No, Peruvian would go back to the outer sanctions of Babylon, Bob.
Oh, okay. All right, good. No, that's Lucian. You're right. Okay, so what's interesting, Barbara...
I mean, you don't know your chart, but we're getting pretty good at it, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I'm just laying back, and you're the butler now. You're the angel. You do the work.
Ah, we just yield. It's great fun. Brian, you hold yourself back there. You're going to wake up
if
you keep going.
Yeah. So Barbara, what's interesting, you know, people go on the internet to find odd scenarios, the harp, the conspiracy, this and that, all the fringe media that's symbolized by...
Okay, we'll be back. 10 minutes.